Today's program was brought to you by Mood Magazine, a new international quarterly publication about music and food. For more information, visit moodmusicfood.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with another host.
Yes.
I'm going to let you intro yourself. You must have a lead, a natural thing that you do at the beginning of each segment.
I just say, let's eat delicious food. I'm Katie Quinn. I'm a video journalist for Now This News, and I host things, especially involving eating delicious things.
And Thanksgiving being one of them, right? Coming soon. But this is funny. It's come full circle, as I was just joking before. Katie interviewed me, what, how many years ago now?
Probably four.
At Serious Eats. And I just reread it this morning, and I have a couple.
Do you have tweaks?
Well, yeah, no, not tweaks. I have projections and promises that I now have to fulfill. So I put them on my 2014 must-do list.
All right. I'm glad I'm still keeping you on your toes.
Yeah, definitely lit a fire underneath my ass this morning. But I'm going to do those. I'm going to prove myself right.
What are they?
I want to try to open a restaurant in the next couple years.
All right.
But that's for another show.
You know what's funny is that I considered rereading that article before today, and then was like, you know, I can't bring myself to look back at things that I did, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, because I usually can't get through them without cringing.
No, you have to. You got to see that progression. But there are certain consistencies, and thankfully I have some continuity in my life that proved to be true. So I was happy for that. But enough about me. We're on to you this time.
Yeah.
This is your form. So, Katie, we were talking about the Midwest. Tell me about your upbringing there in relation to food.
So I'm from Athens, Ohio. It's a small little college town. It's where Ohio University is. And kind of the best way I describe it is that it's like this little hippie enclave in the middle of a kind of purple state. So it's like the bluest of blue little county. And there was a lot of culture because it's where it was this college town. So I grew up having like the International Food Fair. Every summer was like the thing I looked forward to, because our downtown block was just like filled with international students bringing their own cuisine. So growing up, I saw a lot and I tasted a lot, even though I was born and raised in this small-ass little Ohio town.
I mean, walk me down that street. What heritages, what cultures were being served?
Oh, man. What comes to mind right away is Indian, Chinese. We had noodles. We had the lamb on sticks that were just like in the heat of the summer, just on the grill there. And, you know, now even it's the kind of thing where I would still eat it and love it, but I might go, all right, how long has this meat been sitting in the sun?
The summer does delusional things to your appetite sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, bibimbap and just, like, you know, there were a lot of Asian students who would come to go to grad school at OU, and they would just, you know, bring their kimchi, and then that also spilled into like our babysitters. I have an older brother, and our babysitters, like Kimia from South Korea, was my favorite babysitter. And you know, Anju, and like all of these babysitters, and they would make us their food. And so I remember going to elementary school and bringing seaweed with me, and I loved it. And people were like, what are you eating? I'm like, it's seaweed. It's delicious. I didn't even want to trade it for people's ho-hos.
No, I had a babysitter too, who lives in Crown Heights, and she's from St. Vincent, I believe, Caribbean. And we went to one of her son's weddings, and they served like stewed goat and rum baba cake. Oh. And, you know, as, I don't know, maybe I was like 8 or 10, I could have like pushed that away. It was so good.
Right.
And then, you know, I come back and my favorite parade in New York is the West Indies Day Parade on Eastern Parkway.
Oh, yeah.
And it just harkens back to that. It's just kind of an amazing recall. But it can come from anywhere, from, you know, a street fair to a babysitter, which is kind of amazing. But was food a summer fling for you? Was it just, you know, one of those things where you walked down the street, tried everything, and then, you know, forgot about it for the rest of the year?
Yeah, actually, it was. I mean, except for, you know, the seaweed with my lunches, I guess. But I really fell in love with food and the culture of food when I moved to New York after college. I was just infatuated, and my eyes were just blown open by the scene here, just the culture, and, you know, going out to Flushing. And I remember, like, in my first year, I would read about all these places, and I would, like, drag friends with me out to Staten Island to go to this, like, random, like, poo-poo platter place.
You say Staten Island like it's so far away, but truthfully, I've lived here for over a decade, and I've never been on foot instead. I've taken the ferry.
You take the ferry, have the beer,
yeah.
And then get off and right back on. Yeah,
beer. I do three cycles during my birthday, but I never step foot on.
Right, well, that ferry ride's a good one. But yeah, no, it actually is, for someone living on Manhattan or in Brooklyn. I live in Brooklyn. It's like, yeah, why would I go to Staten Island? Well, because they have really great ethnic food, and so I realized that it was something that possibly I like more than other people when I was, like, dragging friends with me who were happy to go to, you know, McDonald's or something. I would be like, come on, don't you want to try this? And be like, okay, Katie.
So you were an NBA page.
NBC.
NBC.
But I wish I worked for the NBA. That would be awesome.
You're tall enough.
Right? At one time, I thought I would be the first NBA female player. This was before the WNBA. Anyway, yes, I worked as an NBC page.
And, you know, I think because of, like, 30 Rock and, you know, certain shows, that has been shown in a completely different light, but craft services. Oh, I mean, let's talk about what food is served at NBC.
Oh, my God. You know, Michael, you really just hit a nostalgic point for me, because I am all too familiar with the craft services, because all pages are. Because pages are paid next to nothing to basically work at least 6 days a week, like, random crazy hours. We were just the guinea pigs, basically, of NBC. And so we are also the vultures. Like, any time a conference room was freed up from the meeting and whatever food was there was just picked at, pages would descend, like, and literally one person would find out and send out an email to all the other pages, like, yo, conference room on the third floor has some bagels and some cream cheese left, and, like, everyone would just go running. So a lot of you know, breakfast fare, the bagels, the cream cheese, the grapes, strawberries, a lot of sandwiches. Those are my recollection of NBC conference room guest
services. That doesn't seem as exploratory as you were with ethnic cuisine.
And, you know, when you're making $10 an hour and living in New York City, you kind of have to take what you can get.
Yeah.
And then go to Staten Island for the poo-poo platter with your extra $2.
So, you know, NBC, you obviously wanted to work in some kind of media. Was there an intention there? Were you trying to be on air, trying to interview?
So I had zero idea what I wanted to do in my life. And I knew that the page program was an awesome thing. I knew that at its heart, it was exploratory, so that I could go and kind of dip my foot in a bunch of things. And that's exactly what I did. And through those different things, through working on the 2008 presidential campaign, through working at Saturday Night Live, through working at the Today Show, I was able to kind of narrow it down and say, like, oh, these are the things I like about this. These are the things I don't like about this. And then kind of, like, stumbled my way into what I'm doing now.
Well, let's stumble your way to backstage at the Today Show.
Yeah.
You got to interview some pretty important people. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about it. That was the coolest. That was the coolest because, well, some of the cool people are well, you just brought up 30 Rock, like Tina Fey. Mm-hmm. When you're such a big fan of someone's and then you get to interview them, as you have done, and you have an exciting show coming up that I'm really excited to hear. It's just awesome when you get to interview someone who you really look up to. But that totally goes for the chefs. Like, and this was right around, you know, this was a little after the time that I really became invested in the food scene here and had written for Serious Seats. And then Thomas Keller's in the kitchen at the Today Show. Mario Batali, Tom Colicchio, Danu Balud, Ina Garten, April Bloomfield. And I get to interview, like, I get to ask these people questions. Like, okay, I don't care that Kim Kardashian's in the green room. Like, I really could not care
even
less.
Even after the Kanye video?
Oh, my God.
We'll talk about Bound 2 another time. We'll do a whole Bound 2 show.
Oh, yeah, that you should devote an entire episode to that. But, yeah, so that just, I mean, honestly, that just fueled my passion for it. It's like, these people are so impressive, and it really just, like, deepened my respect for them and what they do. And also my understanding of that world so that I could be better, like, with each interview I got better because I understood.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Yeah,
like, you actually have to, you know, it's kind of like cooking. You actually have to follow a recipe, work in a kitchen. It's really? Repetition ends up making it better. But you mentioned Serious Eats.
Yeah,
and it's not in passing. I mean, it was such a strong community for you. And explain what Serious Eats is and how it's great for someone who's trying to figure out what they want to do in food.
Totally. So Serious Eats is a food blog. They're all about passionate eaters. Like, they're not snobs. They love really good food and they love talking about it and why it's good. And so basically, I was just a huge Serious Eats fan. I read that blog daily, like compulsively. I would click back to them. And after the Page program, I had this kind of random temp gig at, like, oh my God, it was in the HR department.
Yes.
Yeah, it was in the, okay, it was, I'm not an HR girl, but it was like this temp gig. I was like, okay, like, you know, I'll stay in the building. I'll like work my contacts, see the next gig I can get. And so in the meantime, I'm like sitting behind this desk doing these things that do not interest me. And just compulsively reading this food blog. And so eventually I reached out to them. I was like, I would love to do anything basically for you guys. Send me places to take photos. Like, I'll go anywhere, whatever you need. So while I was working like a regular 5-day job, 9-to-5 kind of thing, I started interning for Serious Eats. So at 5, when I was done with work, at NBC, then I would go down to the Serious Eats offices and hang out with them for a couple hours at the end of every day because they stay until about 7 or so. So every day got in a couple hours, and just, you really hit the nail on the head when you said community, because they gave me a community of people to really like enjoy talking about food and writing about food. And they're so smart over there and they really give a shit. You know, that's why they do it, because they care. And I learned so much from them. And then, of course, it was an outlet. So it wasn't just a community. I got to write for them, and I got to, like you were saying, you just have to at some point do it. And they kind of let me do it on a public platform.
So let's talk about what you did.
Yeah,
because I remember a piece that you did. I too am a glutenphile, a breadophile,
oh,
but your bread baskets.
Oh, man.
It was certainly after my own heart. You know? And you toured around New York tasting the best bread there was to offer.
Yeah.
Tell me about if those are still your favorites and
oh,
if you found more.
Yeah, well, so that was actually one of the beginning pieces I did for Serious Eats. It was a roundup of the best bread baskets in New York. And I went to the Farm on Adderley one time, which is one of my favorite restaurants in the city. And they just had the most amazing focaccia. This one time I went, I was like, this is the best focaccia I've ever had given to me before a meal. Where else do they give you this like amazing bread? And for any bread lover, it's like, I get this amazing bread before I even eat my meal. This is great. So I like pitched this idea to the Serious Eats crowd. And this is what I mean, where it's the community. They loved it. They were like, oh my God, yes. They were like, oh man, have you ever had the bread basket at Del Posto? Oh, you have to go. You have to check that out. And then they have this network through the interwebs in which, you know, they will like pose the question to the greater community on the internet. And like, hey, New Yorkers, hey, people who visited New York, what kind of bread basket do you like here? You know, our chick, Katie Quinn, is going to go like eat them and whittle down the best. So it was like this, it was really a combination of like everyone pitching in. And then, of course, I got to be the one to go around and narrow down the best.
Yeah.
So it was actually, I think, obviously it was delicious. And I would say that many of those bread basket choices still stand. I mean, Blue Ribbon, Commerce. Yeah, so those things are just all good and still around. But really, it was like the first time I was like, wow, these people, I brought up this idea I thought was so random, and it was kind of random. It hadn't been done, but they all had an opinion.
Yeah.
And then we reached out, and a whole bunch of other people came in with their opinion. Where,
you know, it went from having that community to crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and you being the surrogate either for that crowdsourced material.
It's a tough job.
Yeah, yeah. if only I could be a, you know, surrogate eater for people's wants and needs.
Right.
But, you know, using that information, and now with now this news, which we'll talk about after the break in detail, now you're supplying that information. You know, you, in a sense, you are not the antithesis to crowdsourcing, but you kind of are the aggregate for crowds to source from. It's a really interesting role to kind of be in now, you know, be on the other side of it.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, I don't think I'd really thought of it like that, to tell you the truth, but yeah, nowadays I definitely see myself as kind of a conduit through which people can learn about cool things.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and find out how you became that conduit.
All right.
And the impetus of now this news. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today. What's Mood? Mood is a quarterly magazine about music and food. For its creators, not many things can beat a good record and a delicious meal. Maybe a well-written story or a gorgeous photo. Well, that's all in Mood. The magazine looks at music and food in a cohesive and unique way, with a keen eye to design and high-quality writing. Its contributors are located around the globe, and the stories span accordingly. Check it out today at moodmusicfood.com. That's moodmusicfood.com.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Katie Quinn from Now This News.
Hey, hey.
I wish it was like a Now This News, you know, like in a world, that kind of intro to it. There should be.
There should be.
We'll work on that.
Yeah.
But what is Now This News? It's kind of an amazing thing, because it's this composite of mobile, social, and concise, conflated information all in one.
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. There was, when we started the company, and still is, a void of video news specifically for mobile, so like an app on, you know, Android and iPhone and everything, that's not just repackaged television goods, you know, like specifically made, every single decision made knowing that you are watching this on your iPhone or on a tablet. So it changes everything, the way it goes about it. And then, yeah, for social. So we specifically for Instagram. It's tough to fit everything into 15 seconds.
Well, I mean, we just did 20 minutes. And right. it felt like, what, 2, 3? Right. You know, you sit down for coffee with somebody, and it's usually an hour-long conversation. So trying to get even 30 minutes in on this show feels like, you know, a crunch, yet alone videos that are anywhere from 6 to 15 to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, what is your min and what is your max?
So minimum is 6 seconds for Vine. We have a really, really awesome social team. This girl, Maya Tanaka, she does awesome, like, stop motion. And she tells the news in stop motion in 6 seconds on Vine. It's really, really cool. And right now, our maximum, we don't go above like 20 seconds, even in the things on our app. It really is meant for people on the go. Like, you are looking at your phone, waiting for the bus in the morning. You want to know what's going on. You want to know the news. We got you. And you just got a whole bunch of stories in like a minute's time.
Do you watch ESPN?
I don't.
So ESPN, you know, being the sports media network, it's kind of like that. In the morning, you see 100 stories in an hour. But then people start watching that same 100 stories over and over again, which I'm sure they do with now this news. But how do you keep things fresh and exciting and, you know, inspirational?
You know, it's almost, it's easier to keep things fresh than it is to not, because when you only have 15 seconds, you have to cut out anything that's not fresh. You can only keep the freshest. Like, the most challenging thing about it is the fact that you only have so many words. So, like, I'll write a script that I think is pretty damn good. I'll time it, and it's 30 seconds, and so I have to cut it in half. So what I end up doing is cutting all of the meh stuff. Like, I have to keep, it has to be the freshest, because that is literally all that will fit in 15 seconds.
So, and it's topical. I mean, and you have these themes. So let's go over the themes, and I may quiz you.
Oh, uh-oh.
Like, so sugar porn, yeah. Eat this, food brain, tidbit, 15-second recipe, how to. So how to cut a mango, and give it to me in 10 seconds.
Okay, so you have to cut it down horizontally along the seed, take a glass, put it up against the peel, between the peel and the flesh. Just dig, bam, you got it. And then slice horizontally, slice vertically. There's your chopped mango.
Okay, so I was giving you a couple extra seconds for editing afterwards. But, you know, I mean, you did it. It feels like a rush, you know, trying to get that thing in there too. Sugar porn, the apple galette at Balthazar. How do you describe that in 15 seconds?
Well, luckily I have a really awesome, shooter. His name's Phil Nolan, and, he makes things look so beautiful, that I feel like, and that's the beauty of Instagram, right? Is it's like, it's a visual medium. It's like, it started with just beautiful pictures. So if we can just do beautiful moving pictures, then I think that's half the battle. So then the words that I say, they don't have to fully describe it. I mean, honestly, I wonder, you know, we have over 7,000 followers now on our Instagram account, and I wonder how many of them just watch the video without the sound on, and how many of them watch it with sound. And I think that's the biggest differentiation between our, like, so the Now This Food account is basically like my little food baby. So like every day there's a new Katie's Eatstagram out, and those are the different series that you just named. Every day we come out with a new video that falls under one of those series. And it's just beautiful food things, and it's kind of educational if you want to learn, or you can just watch it and it's just like beautiful food porn. But then the Now This News account, which is like my larger company, I think that then it's more because it is news, because you really want to know what Hamid Karzai is saying about this like deal that they're talking about with the U.S. So that's where it's a little different in terms of scripting, because the food stuff is like,
yeah, but at the same time it's an entry point, you know. And we were talking about leads at the beginning of this episode, and most people, you know, look at a picture or read not even the first paragraph, first sentence, and know whether or not they're interested. I wonder how often people watch your videos and aren't interested, because I'd beg to differ. I'd put money on the fact that like at least 95% of people are subscribed to Now This News because they love everything on there.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way things are packaged and presented, and you know, there's not that big investment in any single thing, but there's a big investment in how news is delivered as a whole.
Yeah, you're right. That's absolutely the where the effort is.
Let's do a tidbit.
Okay.
Thanksgiving Aladdin themed.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
All right. So, you know, I wanted to do something with Thanksgiving, but I wanted to do something fun and that not everyone else is doing. You know, I have so many food blogs and sites that I love and follow. You know, Serious Eats, one of them. Food 52 is another. I just can't get enough of Smitten Kitchen, Joy the Baker. I mean, the list goes on. And I love what all of them are doing. But I wanted to do something totally different because I think that that's what my viewers want to see. And I'm a total goofball, so I like to kind of lean in the goofball direction. So the Latin-themed turkey is basically how to season a turkey with some Latin flavoring in there. So, you know, throw in that cilantro. We got a little chorizo in there. It's just, you know, kind of a fun take on the classic.
But you aren't Latin, are you?
Do I?
Quinn.
No, but that doesn't mean I don't love some Latin food.
Yeah. But so, I mean, lately you were telling me your grandmother's been sending you these old antiquarian cookbooks from whatever reliquaire she has.
Yeah, it's become this awesome thing between us.
And yeah.
I don't know how it happened, but I'm so glad it has.
Are they cultural? Do they have anything to do with your heritage, or are they just random?
They're pretty random, but like the most recent one she sent me is my great aunt Kay went to Oberlin College, and she sent me the Oberlin College cookbook that was like, I guess, given to all students. I don't know if they could cook in their dorms or not, but anyways, the Oberlin College cookbook. And it's so great because she'll go through the cookbook before she sends it to me, and in her letter she'll point out certain recipes that caught her eye. She'll be like, oh, check out page 57, homemade cottage cheese. Bet you never made cottage cheese, did you? Oh, it's really great. You should try it. And then other things where she's like, this looks silly, doesn't it? It's like, you know, grandma comments. It's amazing.
So have you tried cottage cheese? Do you consider these a dare or a taunt from her?
They're totally a dare. And I'm totally game on. I have not made the cottage cheese yet, though. It's on my list. Maybe it'll be on my next Eatstagram.
Please. Yes. Well, I'm gonna keep watching for sure, because I also love these 15-second recipes. Talk about like making something concise. But it also makes someone wonder whether or not they want to go through the process. You know, sometimes you see these 2-hour long recipes where it's, or 3-day long processes. At least you get it all compactly right there, and you can make your decision at the beginning and end of that thing. What are some of your favorites?
Well, I'm glad you said that too, because I love to cook. I really do, but I'm a home cook. I didn't go to culinary school, so this is just something that I love to do. So for these 15-second recipes, we shoot in my kitchen in Brooklyn. And I mean, we have a really dope studio at our Soho, at the Now This News Soho location, but you know, obviously I need an oven and a stovetop sometimes. So we shoot in my little Brooklyn kitchen, and I think it really is like, hey, if I can do it, you can do it. And so that's a part of this series for me, is like, I love this, you will love it too. It's pretty easy, just give it a try, guys. So you asked what one of my favorites are, and I think it was actually just last week's 15-second recipe. It was the roasted butternut squash and red onion. Drizzle it with some tahini and sprinkle it with za'atar, and it is so good. And like every single dinner party I throw, it's on there because it's just amazing. Like, it's just so delicious, and it is literally the easiest thing you will ever do.
So as a VJ, and you're concepting and creating recipes ideas, you also get to pick the food brains. Mm-hmm. I also love that theme.
Yeah.
That topic of other great chefs. Talk to me about who you've met, but how it's changed, how you used to interview then and how you have to interview now since you're in this time constraint.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. First of all, this is like really one of my very favorite things of my job. I love to interview people. I think I'm just such a curious human that I like having the excuse to ask people these questions.
I should just let you do this show. No. I should just brought in another guest and let Katie do it.
No way. But yeah, so like recently I went out to LA and interviewed Roy Choi, who is such a baller guy. You know, he's like started the food truck trend. He just came out with this book, LA Sun, so he's kind of been around. Actually, it's funny, I heard him on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Terry Gross is like my idol when it comes to interviewing.
Agreed, me too.
She's amazing. And so it was so great. I was like, ooh, I got to Roy Choi before Terry Gross. But yeah, to answer your question about, it's so different interviewing someone knowing that it's going to be cut down. So what that's actually done is made me be a better interviewer, because I have to think, I have to ask concisely, and that usually prompts more concise answers. And as much as I love small talk, I kind of get straight to what I really want to know. I don't lead up to like, oh, your dog is so cute, and now let's get to what we want to talk about. I'm just like, yo, let's cut to the chase. And I actually feel like, I feel like it's appreciated. I don't know. You know, chefs are no-nonsense people.
Yeah, and they don't have much time. But yeah. I like that you get down to the business. And,
yeah.
But, I mean, distilling information, what kind of questions do you ask? Is it kind of like James Lipton inside the actor's studio?
No, it's totally different every time. And, you know, one thing I always do before I interview anyone at all is check into their background. Like, dude, it's a Google search away. So I really, every person I ask, like, questions are totally different and just dependent on who they are and how they got to where they are. I think people's stories of how they got places is the most interesting thing. So yeah, I don't really have my canned questions. What's your favorite guilty pleasure food? Yeah.
No, I've always kind of been off the cuff, but I work in a chronological matter. You have to have some kind of, you know, I don't know.
What's your thing?
Yeah. Yeah, protocol or workflow or something, even right. though I get off of it all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, being on Just Radio, this kind of brings me to this question. You have Instagram. You have Vine. You even are on Snapchat. There are so many, you know, mobile sites, so many applications, so many outlets. Do you change that information per, or is it one for all?
We change it. Yeah, so literally every single platform, the content is specifically molded to that platform, because we want people who are on Instagram who come across one of our videos for it to feel natural. Like, oh, this is native to the platform I'm on. So this doesn't stick out. This isn't weird. That's our whole raison d'etre, is like, we are creating this specifically for you. This is not a television show that has been cut to 15 seconds for Instagram. This is video for Instagram.
Yeah. And 50 daily videos throughout the station. How many do you do a day?
Probably about a third of whatever we end up coming out with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now I'm totally slacking being here with you. Basically, my coworkers are like cursing me in the office, like, damn it, Katie. Like,
you could just clip this up a little bit and put some funny little stop motion animation to it. Right?
I think that's a really great idea. Maya, are you listening? Stop animation to this, please. Yeah.
No, I mean, so again, with all those different platforms, all those different videos, even though you're projecting 15 seconds of yourself at a time, you are a frenetic person.
Yes, you could say that.
Did you ever think you were going to be a VJ, you know, in front of the camera, you know, doing these interviews?
It's a funny question, Michael. I was a theater minor in school, so I have that kind of flair, I guess. I always have.
Jazz hands.
Yeah, jazz hands, hardcore. I'm doing jazz hands in the studio right now, by the way, everyone. So I think that's always been in me, but I also, once I got to NBC, and as much as I look up to a lot of, you know, the anchors at the network, I never wanted to be like traditional sit behind a desk. That was not appealing to me. So I knew that I wanted to do this kind of thing. I knew I wanted to do some on-camera stuff and be the interviewer, but I didn't know in what capacity, because I knew for sure, without a doubt, I did not want to go the traditional route. I was not going to go to some small town in Nebraska and work my way up the markets because that just didn't appeal to me. I didn't care. So the fact that I can do that and tell it in a way that I think is interesting because no one else is telling it that way, and then do a lot of food videos is super dope. And I feel really happy right now.
So, I mean, how are you evolving? I know this is a young news station, a young group, and obviously there are so many different platforms appearing every day. What are you doing to try to stay ahead of that curve?
I mean, just trying to think outside the box and be okay with new ideas. I think that that was one of the most refreshing things about joining a startup that was so different than network living is that every idea is like, well, shit, let's try it. Like, let's jump in because why not? Like, what do we have to lose? I kind of picture it as like at the network is being in a big boat. And that's awesome for all these, like you have all the resources, you have everything you need in that big boat. But when you have an idea and you try to turn the wheel, it takes like 50 turns of the wheel to make the smallest little turn. Right now, we're all like in a kayak together. So we decide to do something. We like little flip of the wrist with the paddle and we are like, boom, we are that way. So it's just to me more like really fully committing to something. Like with these Eatstagrams, it was like, cool, Katie's going to do this. We want to do this. My awesome producer, Sadie Bass, was like, great, new series every day. What do we want them to be? Let's name them. And then we just dove in. We just dove 100%. And I feel like the flexibility to do that is what will hopefully keep us ahead of the trend because we'll just try new things that other places may be afraid to try.
Well, I know what you're thankful for.
What is that?
Now this news. The opportunity.
The opportunity.
I mean, that's all it takes sometimes.
Yeah.
Just doing it. That initial step. But
you're so right.
Yeah. It's been really great, you know, kind of watching your career and meeting you years ago when you interviewed me, and I'm happy to be able to do that onto you, and maybe we'll just keep on trading back and
I like that.
Forth. So it's not, you know, a single cycle. It's just a continuous.
This really does make me immensely happy. I just have to say that when I interviewed you, 4 years ago, it was because I loved your stuff. I loved your photography and was like, basically, I just want an excuse to interview this person. So so it is super awesome.
That's the secret code amongst all this new media.
Right.
We're just selfish bastards that just want to schmooze with the best.
We really are.
No, we want to meet people that are creative and inspire us. And that's hopefully, it. You know, that's what we can both bring to light. But Katie, thank you again. And if you're not following Now This News, download the app. Get it on your phone. Get it on your mobile device. Follow Now This Food on Instagram. There is so much information coming at you. Watch out. Katie Quinn's on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you again.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.